Bering Sea fisheries is hitting the nursery stock. But there isn't a foreign salmon fishery within 1,400 miles of southeastern Alaska. We've tagged close to 1.5 million salmon out there among the mothership, and Joe McGill's area in Bristol Bay is paying the price for your security. The Japanese aren't taking any of your salmon. If you don't have salmon, you better look at each other and at your fathers and grandfathers, and there you'll find the reason you're not having salmon.
Now, please, I'm going to go back to what I said. We will take the written testimonies first, and the test people that has testimony, and we'll get to this questioning later. There's some of these questions we can't answer. Right now, we're paying for 75 years of mismanagement and honest fishery stocks, and we're trying to find a solution. So the people with written testimony, or they want to give oral testimony, step up here and get, they're trying to get information input. Could you step up here and give your testimony? Please, I'm asking, if you want to get testimony, come up together. I'm not going to have a disorderly meeting. There's too many people want to testify. Huh? Yeah, and then you can't record. I sit right over here.
Oh, here you are. You can hold it right here.
I just want to know if, Bill, a commercial gurney or a sports gurney, how can you clearly define one from the other? I mean, I want to know if, if my fishing gurneys are commercial or sport.
Imagine what you do with your fish afterwards.
No.
what you'd have.
Hey, let's define the gurney first.
All right.
I don't know if you're going to tell me, the commercial gurney is a sport gurney, a gurney, hand gurney, for instance. That's what I want to know, if you consider that a commercial gurney or not.
I'd say it's what type of license you have, and if you're using it with a commercial license and selling the fish, it's commercial. If you're using it with a sport license and eating a fish, it's not. That's the way it's defined by law. Probably don't go into detail.
Yeah, right. If you're using power to pull the line, it's a power gurney. If you're using this to pull it, it's a hand gurney.
Well, but that's not protecting the act.
Okay, is a hand gurney a commercial gurney?
They both can be commercial. You can be commercial with rod and reel. There's some people that make a fair bit of money off them.
Well, thank you.
It's just what you do with the fish. You want to come up and testify. Would you give your name and who you represent? If you represent yourself, say so.
I'm Bob Bell. I represent myself.
Okay.
Why don't you hold that thing, and then you can keep it the right distance to where you can hear it.
Yeah. Well, I fished all up and down the coast, and I make a living fishing. And we have to have limited entry whether we like it or not. I feel we have to have limited entry whether we like it or not. If you go down below now, they're building new boats hand over fist. And I think our limited entry has to include all our fisheries, particularly our Dungeness crab fishery. We're going to see a tremendous increase in Dungeness crab fishing this year, I'm sure. Closer? Okay. And I can't see any way out of any way to control it except a limited entry. And they've got over 250,000 Dungeness crab pots from Fort Bragg to Crescent City. California now, and there isn't any of the fellows making a living at it. And our salmon fishery here is in that same condition, particularly the gillnet and purse seine. Our troll fishery is healthier because of the hatcheries down below, the southern fish that we catch here. But looking at the fisheries on the whole coast, and I'm selfish, I'm going to start in the crab fishery, a commercial troll here now, and I go down and fish tuna. To make a living. I haven't been able to make a living just trolling. And I'd sure like to just stay here and make a living. But I don't think we have any choice except to have a limited entry into our fishery.
Well, thank you. Does it, anyone else wish to testify now? Could you step on up here? Give your name, who you represent. Here you are.
My name's Tom Williamson, I represent myself.
I agree with Mr. Bell that limited entry is more or less inevitable. There are a couple of, at least two provisions of the governor's bill that I feel very strongly about. One of which is investing a proprietary right in a fishing permit, in an entry permit. Now, it's been used a example of you want to be a farmer, you have to buy a farm. We all own our farms. You're trying to sell us a piece of paper. And if I buy a farm, I don't have to go buy a piece of paper. Now, what we're talking about is a commodity that's going to increase in value because of scarcity. The state of Arkansas several years ago passed a law that said that each county could have 25 liquor stores. In Little Rock now, a liquor license costs $250,000. In some of the less populated counties, you can buy one for $12,000-$14,000, which is a pretty good market, pretty good trade in liquor license. In New York City, Manhattan Island, many years ago, said that there would only be 5,000 taxicabs. A taxicab license in New York City now runs anywhere from $75,000 to $155,000. Whether or not you own a taxicab, you still got to have a piece of paper. And this is exactly what would happen to this proprietary right to fish that the state of Alaska proposes to give me for $50, or $50 a year. And I'd like to have it because I'd like to leave a $250,000, $300,000 estate to my children. But I don't think that's fair, and I think it would be the death of the fishing industry, because if we do limit entry and the salmon fishery becomes a profitable industry again, the value of this permit will go up so much that the average individual will never be able to enter into the industry without getting financial backing from the canneries or banks or somebody, and we'll wind up exactly in the position that we were, or where the gill netters are to a great extent now. The canneries would own the man instead of just the boats. And because he'd have to go to them to get the money to get into the industry. There'd be no such thing as a young man growing up and going into the industry unless his father died and left him a permit. And I think this is something that would be the end of the industry. The other provision of the governor's bill that I find terrifying as a troller is the formula whereby he would authorize a commission to evaluate the efficiency of the various fishing methods, and all I see this far is a seiner is much more efficient than a troller, so 10 troller licenses equal to one gill net license, and 100 troller licenses equal to one seine license, so you wipe out, in the interest of efficiency, and just wipe out the trollers. So I think that if the bill is enacted, there should be some prohibition of transferring or converting a troll permit to a gill net permit or a seine permit. And there should be some fixed relationship between the numbers of these permits, statewide or area-wide, at least. The argument on the other provision that if you can't freely buy and sell the entry permit that lacks constitutionality, I think that if there's a provision whereby when someone quits fishing, his permit reverts back to the state. And as long as the industry is in a depressed state, the state only sells 10% of the lapsed licenses. Or when the fishery is no longer depressed, they can sell them on a one-for-one basis on some criteria established based on apprenticeship programs, trade school programs, prior participation. I think that would meet the constitutional criteria of being an open fishery.
Well, some of us are figuring on writing an apprenticeship program. Now, is there anyone else who wishes to testify? Yeah, could you step right up?
Lighter side, if you don't mind. Go ahead. I'll scratch this around, but do you know you had limited entry here in Alaska at one time? About 50 or 60 years ago, a man could get a permit to fish in a certain area, and no one else could come in there and fish. And some of them were fish wheels or floating traps and all that sort of thing. And he could also sell his permit to someone else. If he went to Juneau or someplace like that and got on a big drunk and run out of money, he could turn around and sell his permit to someone else, and that person, had the only right to fish in that little bay or that little sound or something like that. And I often wondered what would become of that ruling. If you come back with the same thing under a different name, but it's won't be to develop into something along the same line. We're going to have people that maybe will sell their right to somebody that isn't even a fisherman, you know what I mean? Maybe it's going to sell it to some farmer.
Yeah, do you wish to testify?
While he's coming up, I think there's too many farmers that don't know.
In defense of not having a limit entry bill, I'd like to ask a couple of questions, which in your opening statement you made here, and I'd like to have them more qualified. First, you mentioned the Canadian limited entry is a success. And I was just wondering, in regards to that, I seen the figures for 1970, of which they had cut their fishing fleet all the way down, like in about a tenth is all it was fishing compared to what originated. First year, 1968, I believe it was, 7,000 boats went out of the fleet. In 70 is the figures which I've seen, and I noticed that their pack, dollars-wise, was up, definitely. But when we ran it down a little closer, we noticed the poundage catch was down. The dollar was up due to the inflationary prices. With the let's just say if only half of the fishermen was in, how do you call that a success when he caught less than half of the fish he was catching before limited entry?
Well, if you figure that every run will be even on every year, you've got to realize there's always going to be some fluctuations. The figures are a little off. They had 7,000 boats when they started. They have 5,000 boats now. They have dropped to 3,000. They have stayed approximately the same on tonnage. The average age of a fisherman has dropped from 55 to 28. The older, younger men weren't too interested in the fishery. It didn't have much future. What you found after limited entry was that the young wanted in, and they tended to be the ones that had a long enough life expectancy to afford to go to the bank and buy one. What they also had was they found that people that were a little older and didn't really want to invest in a boat with the time they had left suddenly realized that they could build a new boat and modernize their equipment, and someone would be pretty sure to buy it out when they were done because they had a permit to go with it. The drawbacks, of course, have been that in Canada, the canned salmon industry has tended to grab too many of these licenses. I feel that we're going to have to build a safeguard in where no one person or company may own two licenses for the same area. All I'm saying is, when you want to look at success, the Canadians were only taking 40% of the troll catch 4 years ago. They're taking a little under 60% right now, and that's come right out of the Americans' hide. What I'm telling you is that a unlimited entry fishery cannot exist in competition with a limited entry fishery. I'll agree that his system of raising licenses would work so long as the licenses were so high that you drove the marginals out. I consider that that would be much more heartless than the governor's proposition, that we can make a few safeguards for an apprenticeship pool so that the licenses won't skyrocket in cost, but we've got to find some way to protect the village fishery that doesn't make any grand amount of money, but it's the only way of life there. But when I say the Canadian system has been successful, the Canadian fisherman has a future. Unlike the Boston dragger with an average age of 62, young men now are turning to the Canadian fishery because it has a future. An unlimited fishery doesn't have a future, because if you double the fish, you'll triple the fishermen. You'll keep slicing the pie thinner and thinner to where there just isn't a living for those engaged in it. And while I realize that this is a complete change of what we've had, it's just like the cowboy with open range. It only worked while there was just grass over the next hill too, and when there was somebody on the other side of that hill, it couldn't work anymore.
The other question
that I think it's working harder than right now based on rehabilitation without a limited entry. The tank calls we have on, it's nice to be here, but it doesn't hold water.
It's not working in Canada, in Washington and Oregon, because the Canadian trawler is taking a bigger and bigger bite of their fish, and the day will come that he'll take darn near all of it. And yes, you can say, if you're figuring what it's worth to sportsmen and what it's worth to the sports goods stores, these are going to come out anytime you have an increase in some fish. It's quite simple. We had a chance. We didn't want to take it when we had a majority. When you have, right now, there's no reason for an old man to buy a new boat, because what is he going to do with it when he gets older? There's no reason for a young man to invest his whole living in it. He can play on it for a few years. But how does he? Look, I started out in Cook Inlet fishing 6 days a week. After 21 days, years, I was down to 2 12-hour periods a week. And hey, that's what you get with an unlimited fishery. It's not that you can hold the same number of fish, but you keep slicing the pie thinner and thinner and thinner to where there isn't a living to be made. It forces the price up. You're not competitive. And this is why the United States imports 70% of the fish we eat. You're just giving it to some other nation.
Well, hey, let's have some order here. Leave one person talk at a time. I'll sit here all night and all day tomorrow to hear what everyone has to say, but I'd like to hear from one person at a time.
The fact that we are importing 70%, I fail to see where limited entry is going to increase the pack. It'll increase perhaps, and I doubt it, but it might increase the amount each boat catches. But I fail to see the overall pack growing, the fact that you took fishermen out of the business.
When you get massive amounts of gear, like we have in the Bristol Bay area and the Cook Inlet area, it means that a minor miscalculation, in other words, fish, what we've already found with our tagging is that fish, a race of fish tends to travel in a school, and so you have a school that's coming up to one particular stream in the system, and it hits on an open period, it can be annihilated. The next race goes through untouched. Now, you're spread out further with your troll fishery. I realize it's a little harder to understand, but remember, this is in all fisheries in all of Alaska, and they've reached the point now in Bristol Bay where it's gone from 500 units to 2,900 units, that there not only isn't a living, but the slightest miscalculation of a few hours can be absolutely disastrous to a run. And, you're getting so many fishermen that the literal amount of fishermen there has become an unwieldy and unmanageable problem. And, of course, they're always putting political pressure on to get another 12 hours or get another few hours. Fish and Game's trying to balance it so they can get the least heat, but still get some fish up to the stream. And it's just a losing proposition, because each year, even though it's marginal, you'll get more people coming into it, a lot of them just for the fun of it. And what it's done to his area is that the fishery has nearly all gone to non-residents, because they've just squeezed the indigenous population down to where they can't even live on.
If we had proper rehabilitation, though, and we was to put twice the fish in there, the escapement, chances are, would be greater, wouldn't it?
No, the fisheries would triple instead of just doubling. You'd just have that many more fishermen that would enter the fishery. You'd still have your massive gear problem. That wouldn't change.
Well, what you're saying, then, the state is willing to invest in rehabilitation, providing they invest it for 1,000 men instead of for 2,000 people that are taxpayers.
I'd say offhand that the fisheries is going, right now, the fisheries takes everything it catches to feed the fishermen. The guy from Anchorage and Fairbanks thinks he's getting a raw deal. And when you go to try and get an appropriation from a man from Fairbanks, he says, hey, you spend $4 million to collect $2 million in taxes and you want my vote? But he's not going to give it.
But if you cut the fishermen in half, there will be half of the revenue coming back in the form of fish license, which is the revenue you're speaking of.
No, I'm not even thinking of that. The fish license is such a minor part of it. Your raw fish tax is your major fisheries revenue. I don't know what the fishing license is, but it's so low that it doesn't even pay for the enforcement that you're in the state of Alaska.
Well, I fail to see how going and asking the Anchorage man for more money is going to change
whether it's involved around 1,000 fishermen or whether it's involved around 2,000 fishermen.
Could you look at it like it was an oil industry for a minute then? Because we had unlimited entry in oil till, well, it was quite a few years ago now. And what it used to be is when they drilled a well in Texas, wildcatted one in, when the fella hit oil, everybody in the country rushed over to slap a well around him to get a share of that oil. And they found that it was costing as much to get the oil out as the oil was worth. The property owner in the state was getting nothing. And so they said, the Railroad Commission took charge of it, and they said, if you don't have 640 acres, you don't drill a well. Now you can, however you want to lease it, you get a block of acreage before you drill that well. At that time when you hit oil, there wasn't any mad rush of anybody to get next to you because they couldn't. And so you pumped slower, it showed a profit, the property owner and the state got a share on their royalty. Right now you can't tax an Alaska fisherman because it takes everything he catches to feed him. What have you got? You can squeeze it out of blood. And so I'd say the fisheries is in the same shape that the oil industry was in at the time that wildcatting was the way of getting oil. And it was a very efficient, inefficient, clumsy, and it showed the state nothing, that when you get an efficient fishery, I expect to see raw fish tax go up. Right now, how could you raise it? Who could afford to pay it? I expect to see the man from Anchorage getting a little something back, so that when you go to him and say, hey, if we can double this run and you're making X number now, this will double the revenue that you can use for schools and roads, and this is how you're getting your share. Right now, a $200 million oil industry is paying 30% of the state budget, and a $198 million fishing industry is in the red. And that's, you know, the statistics for a guy in Fairbanks are real simple.
Why don't you run on up here?
Why don't you come on up so we can get done with it?
This one I want to ask the legislature.
Why don't you sit down and identify yourself? We'll have a nice, good discussion.
They can hear me without that thing.
Okay.
The thing I want to ask is, we all realize that the gill netting situation has got clear out of hand. Anybody that's went up the Lynn Canal or up in the Bering Sea knows this. And we realize that the thought behind this bill in the first place is the gill netting situation and the purse seining situation. But what I want to know is, are you going to punish the trollers and the halibut fishermen and everybody else on account of the gill netting situation getting out of hand? Isn't there going to be a sliding scale with you fellows that you can adjust to on this business so that the troller isn't going to be punished for something that's done 1,000 miles away from him? Trollers don't concentrate in one area over 1 or 2 days at a time. The rest of the time we're scattered over an area maybe 50 to 100 miles apart. I fished up here in Alaska where I wouldn't see another boat for three or four days, sometimes a week. And if I did, 9 times out of 10, it was him coming in from a halibut fisherman. Well, that's the situation we want to know. We're practically all trollers here.
I don't want to penalize you. If you think for a minute that leaving the trollers out and limiting entry into the gillnet fishery wouldn't be a disaster for you, it'd mean that everybody that wanted to come into the fishery without paying would have only one place to come, and that's trolling. I think that the percentages should be frozen. In other words, if you're taking 12% of the southeastern catch, you should keep your 12.5%. I'm not thinking of cutting you. You're, for most part, the troller is fishing your silver or your king anyway. You're fishing a species that's harvested, and that's a very profitable way to harvest it. We're not out to take anybody's license away. But believe me, if we didn't freeze your license number when we froze the license number in the other fisheries, it would be disastrous for you.
Well, it'd be disastrous for you, too. But what I'm getting at is that...
Not me. Remember, I don't represent a troller.
No, but you represent 25,000 fishermen. That's going to be a talk to you.
Yeah, or you bet. I will.
That's what I meant. You're overlooking the fact that the southeastern trollers catch a very small percentage of the fish, of the salmon and the cohos.
the Fairweather grounds, one boat, one of those large boats from Seattle, fishing the Fairweather grounds, catches almost as many fish and makes as much money or more than probably a dozen southeastern trollers. In these little trollers, I'm talking about inside fishermen.
Hey, that's that good. I'm going to try that thing.
Well, you go down and ask them how much money they make. I go by what you have in your billfold, not by theory. I'm talking about the money they put in the bank, and they don't pay any taxes in the state of Alaska. And I think we're overlooking something. We're allowing these people to come up here and fish 50, 60 miles offshore. They bring their food from Seattle, and they take their fish back to Seattle. And why don't that's where we're going to have to do some juggling.
All right. There's two areas that you have a lot of trouble. One is your offshore trolling, and one is your halibut fishing. We used to have a majority. When Canada offered to make a deal with us and split the halibut catch and split the troll catch, we didn't want to because we were taking the majority and gaining. Now suddenly, there in the last 4 years, they reversed all this, and they're taking the majority. And the thing is that...
They're split now.
You split on trolling?
Oh, let's split with them now.
All right, I think we can split with them now. But the thing is, I looked at the king crab, and I'm a State Department advisor on the international fisheries, and we worked a deal where both the Russians and the Japanese take no king crab south of the Aleutian Islands, and we're pushing them out of the Bering Sea. They incidentally are covered under the Truman Doctrine as creatures of the continental shelf. But still, the king crab season last year took just 23 days to fill the quota. Now this is good, solid delivery. You know, it's a quota system. Where it used to take 10 months, 11 months, now it takes 23 days there. It was 28 days at False Pass. This means that people with a $500,000 investment, and that's the size you're looking at in king crab, runs from 300 up. What are those going to do? Just turn to rust buckets? We've lost one of our major fleets because you literally can't support it. It has to turn to shrimp. The shrimp fishermen were fishing a full season for shrimp. Now as the king crab pour into that, their season's being cut to about 6 months. This means the cannery workers are being laid off where they used to work year-round. Now they'll bring Filipinos in from down south, from the fruit workers, to fill this season out. And the local resident just can't earn a living at it anymore. This is the story all over. But I do say that for halibut and offshore trolling, we've got to, after we have the limited entry, we still have to negotiate something with Canada. We have to negotiate multi-state compacts with Washington and Oregon. We already have some. And it's got to be set on a wider thing. I'd say you'll see limited entry on the national level come in. I don't want a federal regulating Alaska's fisheries anymore. Remember, that's what statehood was for, to get rid of that. So this is just the first step. But what I say is you can't save it unless you take this step. But this step won't solve all the problems. We don't claim it will.
Well, that was the part that a lot of the fellows are interested in, because we all know that several fishermen that have come up here from down in the south and went back down south and never paid a state tax. We know several. I mean, everybody knows them. And it's been going on. And yet they get a new license, and they buy an out-of-state license and come right back and operate again. And that's the part we're looking at is we know it was started on account of the gill netting and the purse seining and all that being overly developed. But the thing that bothers us all is and I imagine that every fisherman feels the same way, is they don't want to be punished for somebody being piggish someplace else. We want it understood that we're willing to go along with everything, you know, up to a point, but if it's unfair, we're going to tell you about it.
Well, you'd be kind of foolish if you didn't.
Okay, thank you. Do you want to come up again? Do you just have one question, a short one?
Yeah, first of all, I just kind of wanted to make a statement.
They want to get you on the tape. Could you run up?
Sorry about that. I just wanted to make a statement about our troll fishery that I know our Fish and Game Department doesn't seem to want to admit it, but I'm sure if you talk to trollers up and down the coast, we're depending on southern fish here in Alaska in our commercial salmon troll, and it's a pretty large percentage of southern fish. So I wanted to make that statement because our department doesn't admit this, but we know that this is so. We don't, aren't guessing about it.
Oh, we're aware of this because when we did the tagging to find out whether extending to 200 miles on jurisdiction would be a profit or a loss, we did tagging in the central Gulf of Alaska, and we got steelhead from the Klamath River, and a lot of your southern fish grow in the Gulf of Alaska. We also found out that if you extended to 200 miles, Japan has already given notice that if we extend jurisdiction, they'll cancel the North Pacific Fisheries Treaty. So we wanted to see what impact this would have. And we figure that they take 5% of North America's salmon now. And this runs from 3 to 5 million salmon a year. If they had a 200-mile limit instead of that, they would take from 23 to 25 million salmon. In other words, the bulk of our wintering ground is from 250 to 500 miles offshore. And if they got this side of 175, they could wipe us out. By going no closer than 125 miles to the Siberian coast, they take 70% of Russia's salmon. This is why when somebody says, why don't all the people sit down together and talk? We're not about to sit down at the same table with a Russian delegation and a Japanese delegation. We have to come out loser if we do. In other words, we've got not a satisfactory deal. We don't think they should take any. But they're taking far less of ours than they're taking of Russia's, so we don't even want to sit down and talk together. And we know where those fishes are. We also have a little embarrassment because we don't dare tag any dog salmon in the False Pass Unimak Bight area because they're bound for Siberia. We're taking a large chunk of Russia's dog salmon in that area, and we just don't even dare to tag fish in that spot.
Well, go ahead, could you?
All right.
Give your name and who you
represent. My name is Ray Mosler. I represent myself. What's been explained today here is very enlightening. One thing that interested me was what the gentleman here said about they wouldn't take any licenses away. I think this is important because to many people, this fishery is a way of life. I am what you consider a part-timer, nailed to the cross, right in the cover letter of that bill as a school teacher. And to me, this was something I planned. I grew up in Sitka. I started commercial fishing when I was 13. And I could see that the commercial fisheries wouldn't support me the way I wanted to be supported. So I decided that the best thing to do was to find something to do in the wintertime to augment that income. So I became a school teacher, went to college, and fisheries paid for that. Now I've got to the place where I can teach in the winter and fish in the summer through my own foresight and through my own good investments. And I have agreement with your limited entry, provided it doesn't cut anyone out, and provided that it doesn't say that, well, we're going to take the most efficient fishery for the man that's the most efficient. If I go out there and make expenses and get relaxed and rested up for another year of school, it's paid for itself in that light because I can do a better job at my teaching position. Now, another thing we've overlooked, that we have, and being a devil's advocate here, really, but it's an important thing to think about, we've overlooked the fact that we have limited entry at the present time. And I'm sure we're all aware of this. If you just stop and think a minute. This limited entry is in the form of the free enterprise system, profit and loss. When a man can't make it, he's going to get out. Okay? When you can't support yourself, you're going to find something else to do or go on welfare. And it seems a lot of people have taken the latter way out of this, which is costing the state a bunch of money. What I'm saying is, when you've got X number of dollars invested and you don't get it to return in a business, where'd you get out? Or you find something else to do? You know, I think we're overlooking that too. But I am for a form of limited entry that does not cut anyone out, because to many people it's a way of life. Thank you.
Does anyone else wish to testify?
Yeah, I was afraid we'd be attacked by women's lip here. Anyway.
Could you give your name and who you represent?
I'm Andy, and I just represent myself, and I'm not a women's lipper. I'm just an ever-old, everyday housewife. And I've also lived in Alaska for a few years, and I enjoy living here. And part of that enjoyment is the freedom that I have in this part of the country that's been pretty well limited down south. And one of the things I'd like to do this summer is commercial fish, because I got a new boat I can't afford. And I can't go anywhere in this blasted place unless I get in that boat and go, because there's about 7 miles of road that way and 10 miles that way. And so to live in this country, you've got to have a boat to really enjoy it and to really understand what it's about. And to pay for some of these boats, some of those people have to do nighttime jobs, as the governor called, or, and I fall under that category with him. In other words, what I'm concerned about is, does limited fishery mean that I'm not going to be able to go out there and do my little bit, you know, during the day, bring home some money, make the boat payment, keep my boat, and enjoy all the things I do, and is this what this is going to be, this type of deal? I mean, that's what it's aiming for, isn't it?
I'd say it's not aiming to get rid of that group so far as the percentage of catch that it takes. But it is meaning that if you move up here next year and want to do this, that you're going to have some find somebody that is leaving, and by their entry permit, it will put a lid on the total amount.
And do you know what would happen on a deal like that? It's just like owning a home in this town. When we got here, maybe you could get one for $40,000. It seems like everything's $60,000 now. The less you have of a certain thing to get into, the more it costs. And pretty soon people like me have to live in unsightly trailers because we can't afford those homes, even though we've been here a long, long time. And we'll have to stay longer to afford those homes. But that's the point about this limited entry. Now suppose that I've been here for a while, but this is the first year, say, I want to get started because I just got my boat. That would cut me off right from the beginning. If I went out this year and got one, this bill would cut me off right now.
I'd say if we can pass the effective date, anybody that hasn't actively been engaged in the fishery prior to that date will not have the right to enter except by purchase.
That's what I was getting at. Okay, now, you said you looked at every other problem, this particular problem, in every other way, and we can't do anything now about what's been done in the past. The problem we've got now is we don't have enough fish for the number of fishermen. And even though in the past we've had all kinds of things like robin screams from our own fishermen, and I witnessed this my second year here in Alaska, and you wonder why you don't have any fish. You sit right there at the mouth and wait for them. And I've witnessed that myself. And plus we've got, like you say, people coming from out of state who take their money and they go back and spend it in that state and not in Alaska. There should be some way, you should be working on some way to try to control that, and plus the fisheries rehabilitation you need. Plus this gentleman with a real good idea here of a fisherman's fund, because I know when I grew up and I had to pay for my shoes, they sure lasted a lot longer. And if you have to pay for something and put some money into it, then you're going to treat it a little bit better. And Joe said, was talking about the buying the licenses before, and what the guys did in those days, they just fished her out and left. The reason they did is they didn't have to worry about it. But if he had a fund set aside and he saw, I got $500 I've invested over 5 years sitting here, I'm not going to leave and let that go to waste. I'm going to take and rehabilitate this bay myself and what have you so I can sell it and all this kind of stuff. I mean, there is other things that you could look at, and I see that both of you are definitely for this bill, because every time we say something converse, you come back with a good old argument to knock us down. And I've only heard one guy say up here. I know how it is in politics, too. I've been around Washington, D.C. for about 14 years of my life, too. And I was real interested in that stuff. And I know that you guys have got to give in to other guys to get what you want for the certain people, certain things. But these people, there's only been one or two men that have come up here and thought this entry thing was a good deal. And the rest of us don't like it. But and you know what? You've got to do something some way. But it don't make any difference what we're thinking. I mean, you still want to push the idea because you think it's right, and maybe it is right, maybe we're all a bunch of dummies. But still, you know, you're representing us.
All right.
And that's what we're here for.
And
she gave a beautiful argument for limited entry. If you really want to make a man pay attention to whether he's taken care of a resource or not, you just figure where his license is worth something and what it's going to be worth if the fish go down versus what it's going to be worth if the fish go up, and you've converted him to a conservationist in a hurry. I've had one guiding principle in politics that's always proved true, that when a man's self-interests are at stake, his morals are somewhat less noble than those of a fox in a henhouse. And unless you show a profit being good, there's not much incentive to being good. It pays, but it doesn't pay very well.
Does anyone else wish to testify? Would you please come up here, please?
Come on up and put it on the table. You know, we got to have two people anyway.
What is the requirements for your permit?
Well, the requirements that I would like, quite truthful, and whether I'll win in the legislature, I don't know. As I said, it's a give-and-take operation, is that if you have previously fished, that you will be entitled to continue to fish in the area. For instance, if it was a hand troll, you have the right to continue as a hand troller. If it was a power troll, fine. If you've had several things, we're not going to take those several things away from you, though the buyout assessment might be on each type of gear. So if you own several types of gear, your annual assessment might be three times higher. But I don't want to really force anybody out. I've got a lot of villages in my district, for instance, that have no other way of earning a living, and they're not very efficient, and they don't bring in any great big amount. And believe me, I'm not about to take anything away from you. But on the other hand, I see it on the national level. I've been all over the world looking at fish farms and rehabilitation. And the thing that I've seen is the areas that have a limited entry fishery have a more stable fishery and have a growing fishery. And the ones that treat it as a common resource, it has, just like our public campgrounds. Everybody uses it. Nobody takes care of it. Now, I don't want to take your licenses away. The sports commercial catch such a negligible portion of the catch that I don't see why it couldn't continue indefinitely. But you have to put a lid on it, because if you close the other fisheries and don't close that, you'll be so overcrowded that there'll be nothing left for anybody. So you've got to put a lid on the whole thing if you're going to put a lid on it all. And if you don't put a lid on it all, the United States, instead of being 8th place, will be 10th place in a couple of years. And it's just not even in the national interest to keep this. Nobody takes care of anything that isn't their own. And about saying that you'll take care of it by paying so much in to a fund, unless you know that you're going to get a share out of that fund, the incentive to really take care of it just isn't there.
Well, you mean in order to get this permit, you have to have fished.
Yeah, paper license won't do you any good.
Well, that's what I mean. And how can you say, a lot of people buy a fishing license, but they don't always make a lot of money. Are you going to go by the amount of fish?
No, I'm not going by the amount of fish. I'm just saying, if you have actually fished and can prove by affidavit or other that you have bought a gear and actually fished out there, have made a delivery. In other words, all of you have made some delivery. $4 worth? Fine. $4 worth is good enough. For a sports commercial, we're not... Whatever we freeze that area in, that's what it is. You can be fairly lenient now, because then there'll be a buyback. People that want to sell to the state because the value of, they don't care where they sell locally, fine. When the state gets a hold of a license, they burn it. That's one less.
I also understand that in this reading is that there was a place where it said that you have 5 years, right, to fish your license. If you don't, then the state takes it back, right?
There's all sorts of things on that. As far as I'm concerned, you could not renew for a couple of years, and to get back in at that time, you'd have to pay all the back assessments. In other words, to keep your license, you're going to have to buy the license every year, even if you don't fish, and pay your assessments. But I'm not going to require that anybody has to go fishing, because if you'll pay all your assessments and not fish, that's just so much better for the rest.
But is it right? Because there might be others that want to fish and might be just as, in some senses, as eligible. But if you have a license already and aren't going to fish, then the other fellow can't get in.
Well, if you're going to keep it indefinitely and pay the assessments, it'll start getting expensive.
A lot of people that finances don't make that much difference as long as they have the right to do something they want to do.
When you're trying to reduce the total number of fisheries, the person that will pay all the assessments and not fish can be an asset. You know, it's according to whether you feel that you must reduce to a certain level. Now, I don't really feel in your sports commercial that there need be a reduction, because you're just not 12, what is it, 6% of, no, 12% of about 6% of the total fish isn't any amount that I call it excessive. But now when you start to keep his right to come back.
One last thing before I go is, I'm sure that most of the people here hold commercial fishing licenses, and a good percentage of them fish commercially. It seems odd that they all object. There must be some reason. It can't be that it's going to hurt them in some ways, but maybe it's going to hurt their children and other people that come, and maybe this is why people are objecting.
Well, I mean, the thing is that my whole family is fish. You know, it's what my son will have to, and I have a 12-year-old that doesn't have a license. A couple others that don't have licenses. But the thing is, right now, my son has no future in the fishery. You're looking at it as sports commercial. You know, it's your plaything. And I can remember the time we were negotiating with the Japanese and we wanted to stop the bill fishery off Samoa so we could develop a tourist industry. And that Japanese didn't even wait for the translator. He just stood up and said, "You mean you want us to stop eating them so you can play with them?" And the thing is that you want, you know, there are people that are in desperate need of these fish to live. And while I don't want to take away your right to this pleasure, and I'm not going to, why, the guy that's really in the back of my mind is that guy out of Kodiak that's got no other place to go. And the fisheries are just getting tighter and tighter and tighter. And he's the guy that really counts, because he lives by it. It's not his playing around. That's what he feeds his family with. And there's got to be a future for his kid, too, somewhere.
That's true. It's awfully hard to judge one area by another, though. And this is, I think, what a lot of people object to, is because they hate to be labeled the same as the fisheries up there are.
Well, we don't. Even the governor's bill, as the lawyer tried to explain to me, it had every intention of keeping the fisheries separated so that you wouldn't require 4 out of 5 of the sports commercial to be removed from it. But if we limited the other fishery and didn't limit you, it'd be a pretty crowded situation in a little while.
And if that's all you have, I am going to call a recess for about 10 to 15 minutes. I'm going to call the meeting back to order. And I would like to get more testimony instead of having a question and answer deal. I know some of the people wants to hear more testimony and have more input into the bill. Could you identify yourself and tell us who you represent?
I'm John Barr, and I represent myself. I might say that I've been in this fishing industry for a couple of 3 years, a little over 40 as it is right now. And I have had to think this over, and I hear the different arguments here. The biggest thing, it seems to me, that has come up so far is how much am I getting hurt? I'm going to have to go as far as the limited entry. I don't know whether this is the answer to it, but we've got to make a start someplace. I've seen the trolling industry and the halibut industry go from a very lucrative industry to a low and then come back a little bit. And I think the only ones that really have solved their own personal problems. We as trollers, we don't seem to be able to get together too much in solving some of these things. But now look at our halibut industry. They never had limited entry on it, but they did overfish the industry. And I can recall as a lad out here when the Zipporah and the old schooners, King Wing and those fishing vessels came up here and fished with dories and got full catches of fish for many years, and then finally it waned on down to zero. Well, they got together and they, by gentlemen's agreement, not by any acts of the legislature or acts of Congress, but they enforced upon themselves a curtailment. And this helped them to build their industry up. Now, this was a partial answer to that. Of course, they had, there was nothing to limit the licenses, limit the crews. I fished on the schooners that had 11 and 12 men where you fished around the clock. And at one time, we were to go out, we were allowed 3,000 pounds per man. And we had a layup of 10 days. Or if we caught over the 3,000 pounds per man, you had an extra day layup for 3,000 pounds. Well, this helped. And they gradually built their fisheries back up where they could make a living at it. The prices went up along with it. But I say, this was gentlemen's agreement, and I think this is a very lucrative way that they handle it, but I don't think that we can do it this way. Our biggest problem seems now that, that I've listened this afternoon, is the housewife, the cab driver, the fisherman, and anybody else, folk mill worker, all, is how bad am I getting hurt? Well, we have to have some kind of control, in my estimation. I don't know what this control will be, but I don't know whether limited entry is going to be the answer to it. Like I say, we have to make a start someplace. And so personally, I can say that I'm ready for the getting the start of it. If it isn't right, it has to be compatible. It has to be constitutional. I think one of the things that's going to have to be taken into consideration is how constitutional is a lot of these things going to go in. Whether it's going to interfere with our free enterprise, whichever man has that right. Because years ago, we had the imposition of the higher fishing license put on. It was challenged, and the Supreme Court said it was unconstitutional. I think Mr. Petrovord, he went to a lot of work there, and I think his ideas were good. But again, we have to ask ourselves the same question, will it stand up in a challenge? Is it going to help the industry? And I think whatever we can do to help it, personally, I think if I have to get out of the fishing industry because I'm not putting out and it's not feasible to me, then I've got to go. And I've been in this thing all my life. But I think that, I don't think the governor's bill was exactly the proper thing, but I think one thing that he did, he got us all stirred up, by gosh, and got us out. We wouldn't see this many of us here this afternoon. A lot of people blame the governor. I don't blame Mike for congratulating, by gosh, for getting us all up on our hind feet. I'm not neither Republican or Democrat. I'm not campaigning for anybody. But I was glad to see this hearing come here this afternoon, and we can give our views on it. And I think a lot of them haven't come up here because they're the same as me sitting back and listening. We've got to get a start. We've got an answer someplace, and we're going to have to leave it up to you fellows in the legislature. We know that our recommendations are only giving recommendations. Whatever goes up there is going to be what you guys put up. And believe me, the next election time comes, it better be pretty good. That's all I've got to say.
So thank you. Does anyone else wish to testify?
Yeah, here, you got one. Well, go ahead.
Come on up. Give your name and who you represent.
My name is Ronald Sparks. I represent myself. I've got to stand forward to Senate Bill number 39 on the grounds that residents of Alaskans here in southeast Alaska, anyway, will be sacrificed at the expense of the non-residents, who, in my estimation, have created the problem we have today. Now, more specifically, I haven't heard anybody talk too much about the degree of economic interdependence on the fishery clause, which would exclude me from the fishery, in which I participated for the past 19 years. Now, a lot of resident fishermen in southeast Alaska hold outside jobs. I can think of very few non-residents who do. I think it was Gary Erb the other day who said he couldn't think of one non-resident fisherman who have an outside job and going down to the airport to pick a plane ticket to go to Mexico. And no one has mentioned anything. How about the present full-time fisherman whose wife works to supplement family income? Does this constitute economic dependence? I'd kind of like an answer to that, if you don't mind.
Well, you're putting me on the spot. I mean, like I say, I'm...
I'm here to get information and find out what the problems are. I realize we've been put on the grill up here, but that's not the purpose of this hearing. We're trying to get a bill that everyone can live with, not to sit here and answer a bunch of questions.
Okay.
We'll have to do that if we make mistakes.
Right.
We're trying to avoid doing it.
Okay, but I really see no difference between a working housewife and myself.
They can do like a friend of mine suggested they do. He's going to divorce his wife if this bill passes.
Well, I think the big point is, would she have to abandon her employment to prove economic dependence? And another thing that kind of sticks in my craw is the residency requirements. Now, according to the statistical data in Bill 39, the number of residents registered here in the southeast Alaska gillnet fishery for 1971 is 320 out of a total of 475. Now this constitutes 66%, which I would disagree with. Maybe I'm wrong. But I don't believe this presents a true perspective of what the way things really are. You know, many non-residents hold post office boxes and this proves valid residency. According to this bill, and I may be totally wrong, but tends to favor the non-resident. I think of an example that happened in Ames in the boat harbor there about 2 years ago, one hot summer day. He's talking to one of these guys, and he said, "Well, I'd like to go up and buy a six-pack of beer." But he says, "I can't stand the thought of paying $2 for that." Now, this is what this bill would support. Now, should it ever come to the point where I have to show intent to participate actively in the fishery, I probably will. But I'm not so totally convinced that my income would double or that salmon and crop rate would return in abundance as anticipated. I'm sure a lot of us wouldn't squawk in productive years. But Lord, help us in the 4 years. I don't mean to be facetious, but if you ever wanted to see me on the welfare rolls, come down and watch. I think I'll be first in line. Thank you.
Is there anyone else that wishes to testify?
No,
yes, go ahead.
Anyway.
I never noticed you having that much difficulty.
Well, give your name and who you represent.
I try not to overdo it. My name is John Fawson. I'm representing myself. The man who just received me, the question he asked, I wonder, is that about other sources of income like a man's wife? Seems like that's more a question than clarifying something that's in the proposed bill, and maybe that should be answered a little bit, how something like that could work.
Well, I personally would object to considering what a man makes outside of the fishery. I feel that if a fella has enough to get up and go to be a moonlighter, he's worth something. Believe me, you know, I happen to make it all with boats, but that doesn't mean that if I get a job of towing that'll pay more than the season can pay me, that I don't want to be able to grab a hold of it and not lose my right to fish. And I'm sure that there's others in it just like that. I don't think you're going to see a bill passed that screens out those of you or even considers what you make otherwise. It's just the governor's office was searching for some way actually it could give people an advantage by taking into consideration such things as the chance for alternate sources of income. You know, the fisherman living at Puna doesn't have any alternate sources of income. The man living in Seattle has jobs available, and they were in hopes when they wrote it that they could screen those out. They're not plain enough. And as a Republican, I probably shouldn't sit here defending the governor's bill. And I'm just so glad that he had the guts to put one in and get the subject opened up that I don't want him cut up on the subject. But I don't think you're going to see anything past the legislature that even looks in. You know, my wife doesn't work, but if she did, I certainly wouldn't want everybody knowing. I don't really think that what I make when I'm not fishing is anybody's business. I don't think income tax form should be what you decide whether a man gets a license or not. I'd say it should be decided I do support a limited entry. I think it should be decided on past participation. You know, if you have a history of being a fisherman, let him in. If a new fisherman wants in, he buys in. I don't think this, I want to see the licenses eventually become negotiable. I believe in the free enterprise system. I think a guy that helps to build a fishery should be able to get a little more for his license because he has helped build it. And, you know, I think there's nothing more free enterprise than that. It's just we're beginning to run out of unlimited resource. In fact, we ran out 20 years ago and are just waking up. Is that good enough?
Yeah. Could, Ted, could you go on with your testimony?
you can't shut both men trying to open another nation.
after serving five churches, Clem, I know how hard it is to shut up.
Anyway, that's the answer to that outside employment that I think I've probably been wanting to hear, and that's why I took the liberty of asking it again. And I also support limited entry. That doesn't mean, of course, like any of us, that necessarily support Bill 39. That would just start. I agree with John Burt that something has to be done here, but I wouldn't be as grim as John in saying that if, I don't think he is inefficient, but if he were, or somebody that is inefficient, that he should be ushered out of the fishery because of that. I think an old timer that's in Point Baker or Myers Chapter or even Pelican, he should be allowed to fix as long as that's his profession and has been. And I don't think it really has any bearing on putting a lid on it. I noticed also that I think one of the ladies said that objected to and she was talking, I think, mainly about the sports commercial, and mentioned that and in the process of objecting the bill, she gave a very good case for limited entry. And I noticed that I went to another meeting here a couple of weeks ago in Sitka, and it was the same way. The people who spoke most loudly as being against it, I think mostly because like I or most of us that have been here a long time, or even a short while, it's hard to believe that the pioneering days are over, that if things aren't, we don't like it here, we can move on. But I think that's what the general legislature pointed out. I think fairly, I'm sure that they're not trying to force anything on us, but I think they're honestly trying to do what's best for the fishing industry. In regard to the sport commercial, I think the discussion we've had here indicates a very fair attitude toward that particular fishery. Putting a lid on it, there's I don't see that the only logical argument that anyone could bring against that would be that they want no form of limited entry whatsoever in the commercial fishery. And in my listening to people talking, everybody seems to, it isn't, they're not against it. They see the problem. Anyone with experience can hardly help see the problem. So the concern is to be fair with the various types of gear, the old timers, and with the people who live in communities that will have children growing into the fishery. The apprenticeship idea was an approach to this. So rather than being in opposition or anything, I myself would like to. With the two louder, not loud then.
Well, you're making a squeal with your hand across here.
Oh, I'm sorry. Getting feedback, no matter what happens.
Okay. I want to hear it twice.
I was just watching another probably too philosophical for somebody that's trying to make a statement here. But I think that the statement that has been made a couple times that most people oppose this, even most people here in this room, it basically isn't quite so. Our experience shows that something has to be done. I think our concern is to be fair, and of course, first to protect our own interests, but then who would even know our own interests, even the special types of gear, better than the man himself. But I think we all can see that something has to be done. I wrote down various things that were discussed, and Mr. Killian answered the questions pretty much. I don't think it was his intention to argue anyone down. It was to make it. It's preferred to clarify things. I was going to mention these various things, such as new entry and rehabilitation, or my temptation is to, but I won't be doing to sum things up. I don't think that I should at this time. I mean, it isn't in my place in giving a statement. The one thing I mentioned is I think it's untrue that that we are primarily against this sort of thing. We want to see it done fairly, I think, more than we are against it. In the matter of rehabilitation and fish runs, as a substitute for limited entry, I think it's been pretty well brought out that it is not a substitute. It's another thing that we're all working for. The various, I've worked on several fishermen's organizations, as we all do, and we're all working for rehabilitation programs and trying to get money for them. But that isn't to say that I'm speaking for myself, but I don't believe that they are an answer to the problem of too much gear, or the fishermen's income, or their revenue occurring to state in the fishery. Without the limitation. The other thing is the foreign fishery. These fishermen's organizations that I belong to and many of us here belong to are all working on that. It's a problem, but none of these problems will go away, and the limited entry problem won't go away either just because we concentrate on these others. So I suggest that we keep an eye on this legislation and try to make it as fair as we possibly can and as beneficial to the commercial industry.
Well, thank you. Do you wish to come up and testify?
I'd like to ask one question before I go. If anyone's here to get testimony, I'd like to ask where we can get answers to questions.
God, at this time, God himself couldn't answer some of these questions you're asking. We're trying to get the information to write a bill that's fair to everyone.
We understand that. We also would like to find some answers.
Well, which question do you have in mind now? Let me ask it.
Fire away.
Go ahead, fire away.
Well, I mean, if questions come up, I have to go right now, but if questions come up, can we write
them? You can write to me, or here's my address.
Write
to Mr. Killian. You can write to me as resource chairman, or you can write to your own Mr. Eliason, and me and him will work together on
this. Actually, Dick here would be the best one to write to, and he can always, refer to somebody else. Though you can write to anybody in the legislature, and darn few of them will fail to answer you. Some of them might not understand what you're saying.
But I can be sure if you write it to Dick that I'll work with him on the problem. He's on the resource committee with me, and we've worked closely together before, and I'm sure you will do it again. Could you give your name and who you represent?
Yes, my name is Vernon Huff. I represent myself. I belong to several organizations in town supporting fisheries. I decided, since you people were nice enough to come over here and convene, although we do seem to have at least one Republican here that at least he kept saying he was. I don't know whether I listened to everything he said. Well, and you got that fairly well balanced, although I see another hand on it. Several things I would like to talk about. Number one, I would like to see, although probably in support of this limited entry. I am against it. I would like to see, as far as the compensation on licenses, I heard several times the fact mentioned that if a license was taken over by the state, bought by the state, the way it stands now anyway, it would be torn up. What I would rather see was less being forward-looking enough to say that we're really going to be a state that moves the way the states down below have, and go ahead. Oh, come on now.
No way. I came up here to get away from that.
Yeah, I know. No, if we're going to start a program, let's do like they did down there with the farmers. You know, like, two fellows get together down at the local club and they say, hey, Joe, what the hell are they doing this year? He says, well, I'm making $10,000 a year for not planting corn. Now, I'd like to see something in this bill. If you're going to go ahead and pass it, and I'm pretty sure that there's going to be something done with it, the same way they pay the farmers, per year, don't take his license. Let that man hold his license and say, okay, fine, I won't fish this year. Now, you pay me not to fish. Doesn't that sound reasonable?
No.
Why not? Why not? It's reasonable to a farmer.
Yeah, it's not reasonable as far as I'm concerned to a farmer. I'm not about to go for that kind of subsidization. I'm perfectly willing to give him a right and not make him sell out. But I would, if he wants to sell out, we'll pay cash.
Well, from what I understood at the onset here, if he holds a license for a year and doesn't utilize it.
Okay. Don't get me wrong. No, I wouldn't consider that. I think a man, as long as he pays his annual assessments and registration fee, should be able to keep it without fishing it, because there's bad years and you don't want fishing.
Okay, fine. Just fishing prior to and holding a license prior to when you go into this thing. That's what you're talking about then. Another thing, the statements you made about an hour ago, 400% increase in fisheries. And in proportion to what we had at the time.
Oh, I'm not talking about the Alaskan fisheries. I was talking about the world harvest of fisheries.
The world harvest.
Has come up 400% in 10 years.
Okay, do you have any figures on the percentage of increase in rehabilitation programs during that period of time?
Well, I'd say they'd be a drop in the bucket compared to that. The bulk of those fisheries were Poland, East Germany, Russia, Japan's high seas fleet. They have no conservation motives at all. They know that extended jurisdiction and limited entry of one sort or another is in the future, and they're out to get as much as they can get right now without any regard to what they do to stop. Our Pacific Ocean perch are being annihilated at the moment right out here, and we don't have any recourse because of the fact that this far north we don't have a fishery, and you're only entitled to negotiate for a fishery that you're engaged in.
The statistics of he just asked me to see them in I believe it's a January issue of Fish Bowl. This gives the complete world fisheries, landings, percentage, and the whole of all different types of fisheries.
Thank you, Alan. Another thing that I would like to see go into this bill, since I'm not in support of it, would be the possibility of step at a time, looking ahead and knowing that we will have to go ahead very probably to a whole scene as far as limited entry is concerned, and starting with where your primary concern is in the area that you have your expertise, such as Cook Inlet and so on and so forth, and take care of the problem there at the onset with this bill, having some sort of a rider to it so that you could come into the other areas as they show the need. You know, like limit your fishery up there now, and then within the next year, if the other fisheries are put upon by depredations from the fishery that you put the lid on. Because I know within reason that you're probably correct in saying that it definitely would be a big influx of fishing fleet from one area into another, you know, I mean onto another fishery if you put a lid on it. So you can, according to your statement anyway, you can't put a lid on one at a time. And I would rather it was that way. I would rather see it that way if we have to have it. Because Well, I feel that way. I would rather have it that way.
I didn't even know how to say that, so you know. Yeah. Well, hey, man, I'm with you.
Yeah. But the Commonwealth would have been a better way to go.
I'm on your side for one. The only thing I say is that if I just protected my district and disregarded yours, the impact on your fishermen would be disastrous. Now, if you're a sports commercial, you might survive this disaster. But if you're actually dependent on the fishery, might I mention scallops, which you remember the big scallop fishery. If we had limited that to 4 boats, which our biologists knew was capable of harvesting that coast because there isn't that much area and they take 15 years to mature. But no, we brought up 16 boats, the fishery lasted 2 years, and it's over. And I just don't feel that you really, if you stop to think it over, would want to subject the new fishery to that. We have some areas that the fishery is just developing. Sea urchin eggs, for instance, you know, are going to be a pretty good market item. For God's sakes, let's limit it now before it's being... I like raw fish and eggs and all of that stuff.
Well, the only thing I would say would be in support of my contention would be you're dealing with different types of fishermen and different types of gear. In that, primarily, a troller is more of a one man by himself. He's more of an isolationist. He's more of a free thinker, and he fishes. And you're not going to take these large boats that are fishing in one area and run them in and really suck up all these fish as far as the troller is concerned.
Oh, you're thinking of just leaving trolling out. I think you need help in your same fleet and your gill net.
You do, the same feet and the gill net. But the troller right at the moment is the only one who isn't limited to some sort of a time schedule as far as per hour, per day, this type of thing. They have, like they start out trolling when the season opens in the beginning of the year, and they're 7 days, 7 nights, whatever they want to fish.
Well, the fish don't always bite, though.
Well, that's for certain. Okay. Another thing, a question that I'd like to ask, and this, I should, like you said, you shouldn't ask questions, but this has a lot to do with making statements. Okay. This has to do with giving testimony too. How much good does, for instance, the Sitka Advisory Board do as far as fish and game action or legislative action as far as testimony or anything else? Or do we have to, or should we have a man on the floor over there working for us, not as a senator or not in the House of Representatives, but do we have to have someone there plus our advisory board to really do us any good? Because it seems to me like in several instances when our advisory board here, comprised of 15 members of people representing all the fishing industry, come up with something as far as taking care of regulating a fishery so it won't be depleted, and it's completely passed over and overlooked simply because it's the way I see it, that we don't have a representation on the floor to argue for a particular thing. What good is an advisory board, or is a group of fishermen, if they get together and come forth with an idea and make a statement or make a public commitment to a particular way of thinking, how much good is it going to do if it's not listened to?
Answering your question, it don't do any good, but I always try getting public input myself. I can't answer for other groups.
Mr. Chairman, you're referring to the Fish and Game Board, not the legislature.
Well, Dick, there were letters written to the legislature, too, supposedly.
Yes.
Maybe they weren't.
The legislature is very reluctant to write fish and game law.
That's correct, too, I guess.
Man, this is frustrating because we have the same problem you have.
Yeah.
And they keep telling us time after time after time they want input from the people. And you give them input and they disregard it.
Yeah, well, hopefully, the reason I asked this question was you people come over here and you spend a lot of damn good time and a couple of dollars to take input from us. And after it's all run through, this whole thing is all run through and all the statements and everything else are taken down, and correlate, and you take them back. I'm kind of wondering just how much good they're going to do. Are these, is this being taken from all over? I mean, are you getting the input from each particular location that voices a need for expressing an opinion?
Basically,
don't get us involved with the Fish and Game Board. This is a problem that's completely. You have much more input in the legislature than you do in the Fish and Game Board. I mean, this is not a question there involved.
What you're
doing here is we're here because we have a bill before us, and nobody likes this bill. And what we're trying to do is get how are we going to change it to make it compatible with the people who want it. If we can't find a solution, we won't have a bill. I mean, it's that simple.
What we have is. Nearly everywhere in Alaska, actually Sitka was one of the few places that we had people that said we don't want any bill. The overall Alaskan, whether it comes from Ketchikan or Petersburg, has been, yes, we don't like this bill, we want some changes made, but we want limited entry. Then we're going to have to, we've got places like Cordova, you know, that's a real professional fisheries town. Naturally, the weight of Cordova, in my mind, would outweigh Valdez, where they're waiting for a pipeline. You know, but as I don't represent either area, I'm just trying to look for solutions. And if you say that limited entry is unfair, hey, I agree with you. It is unfair. But which is more unfair, allowing a resource to continue its trend down or shutting somebody out that should be allowed in? And so it's, you've reached the point, just like zoning and sewerage and all that, problem, you know, you have to start looking for which is the most unfair or which is the fairest route of something that we know there's going to be people hurt on both sides. So we're just looking.
It's going a little farther, like in my district. I send out a couple of hundred copies of the governor's bill, about that many more of a resource committee bill, and 750 letters. And I've got 3 letters back that said they're in favor of it, and the biggest organization up there send a lobbyist down to work for it. I mean, that covers some of the areas that's hurt the most. And that's Bristol Bay and Aleutian Islands, part of the Aleutian Peninsula, Shimmigan's. It covers pretty good cross-section of your fisheries. Several of the major fisheries in Alaska. And I sent it to every one that I figured would be interested.
Now, their man is very easy to deal with. He says, we hope you can make it fair, but even if you don't, we want it.
Well, I think that Sitka is generally right up with everything as far as fishing is concerned, because everybody's pretty well represented here. We have seiners and shell fisheries and trollers and longliners, black cutters. I think the one thing that stuck in my mind is not being brought up as far as a solution or a partial solution to the problem we have in depleted fisheries is a bill that was introduced in the House by our friend Dick over here the other day. I hadn't heard anybody discuss it at all. What sort of a chance do you think that fish farm bill has, Dick?
Well,
I'd like to...
Go ahead, Dick.
That is one thing that really would inhibit the fisheries.
If I may, Mr. Chairman, this is a quite similar bill to what Killian had in 5 or 6 years ago. Went back through the files to dig up some type of a fish farming bill to get something before the committee to get people interested. Do they want something like this or don't they? And right now it's assigned to the subcommittee and the resources. And we have the laws. Washington, Oregon recently passed similar legislation which allows this type of development of the resource. And we hope that we can use these basic guidelines to draw something which would be workable in Alaska. And when we get something drawn up, then you'll know all about it. You might take testimony on this if you're interested in it. Fine, if you're not, well, that's another story. But We don't want to sit there with tunnel vision. We know there's other ways of getting this resource back. Now, the fishing game is hung up, in my opinion, on one course, and that is rehabilitation of streams. So we can't get them started in these hatcheries. They do, but it's because we're pushing them. Now, I say this is a case of tunnel vision, but we don't want to be tied into this type of concept. We want to look at all angles, and what if it has to be a fish farm, if it helps the resource, let's do it. But the only way we can really get into it is to put a bill out, and that's what we've done, and we're going to try to come up with something that might interest the people and it might not. I don't know, but we're working on it.
Yeah, well, thanks a lot, Dick. Yeah. I'll get away from here. This can get real involved. The only thing of it is I would like to thank you people for coming here. You give us a hell of a shot at you, and you've taken a lot of flack. And I'd like to reaffirm the statement that I am not in favor of this bill, but when it does pass,
yeah.
I certainly hope it's equitable to everybody concerned. Thank you.
Is there anyone else that wishes to testify?
Yeah, there's... Would you give us your name and who you represent?
Yeah, my name is Jerry Bourne. I represent myself. And I was taking into consideration you're talking about. I'm a moonlighter. I'm a weekend fisherman and try to stay out of these big boys' way. But overall, now I'm a government worker. Another one of these soft government jobs, and I didn't know it was so soft until I read about it in the bill. Since Nixon can lay me off in a minute's notice, which he did. But anyway, we want you to take into consideration that we pay our toll fee and our gear license and our boat license. We go up here, there's, I'd say, over there on the island, there's approximately 75 of us weekend fishermen. And the testimony I've seen here today is not against us, really. I think it's fair so far. I'm kind of like Vern, I'm against it because I come to Alaska because I wasn't told where I had to go or what I had to do. And I haven't been here very long either, only 7 years. But anyway, we don't, all the money we spend on our patrol and our gear, and locally, buy most of it locally, I'd say, we do not get any write-off on our income tax from the state or any benefit on it. We have to share the full brunt. We cannot write it off because we are employed gainfully elsewhere. And this was told to me very quickly when I first applied for a write-off as a business, which is actually, this is a side business such as a speedometer shop or going out here and fixing something else in small businesses. And you're gainfully employed somewhere else. Now, there's one question that lies in my mind. What if I decided, you people have said, fine, if you've got a power troller and you've got a license and you've had one for several years or you've had one, fine, you will be able to continue fishing. This is fine, but what if I decide to sell this old boat of mine and go into fishing full time? Who can I sell it to? Because this man that goes by is not wanting that boat for a troller. It's not really a commercial troller, it's a weekend fishing boat. It's designed for this, which most of these boats over there are. And who's going to buy it? What am I going to do with it? Sink it? There's nobody can buy it because they haven't got a license to, the boat isn't licensed, I'm licensed. Now what are we going to do with it? Several of these fishermen here now have got boats. Say this boat comes up, this gentleman wants to sell his boat and get a new boat, as they do quite frequently, and they want to sell this boat. Who in the hell's going to buy it? Well, we can't get a license for it. We're not going to license. It's not licensed. We got a $10,000, $15,000, $20,000 investment here, but we can't sell it. What are we going to do with it? Want to go buy a new boat. Can't trade it in like a new car or an old used car. What are they going to do with it, or what am I going to do? So if I didn't have a license, what am I going to do? This is just questions brought up to on testimony. That's all right. That's all I've got to say. Thank you.
Well, we should answer that one for him, Joe. The thing is that there'll be, if you've got a $15,000 or $20,000 boat, there'll be somebody, whether you're in the support commercial, there'll be somebody that... you sponge your McGill. That's what you get dealing with a Democrat.
That's all right.
I always come
up here because of the Republicans.
But what I see is, you know, I have the same thing with my old Saner. Hey, if it's such a junker that nobody will buy it, maybe it's time to push it up on the beach. But the thing is that if it's worth what you say yours is worth, it'll have a sale. If your license is only a sports commercial, I don't know if it's
My license is full commercial. I don't hold no sports license off of it.
Yeah, well, I mean, you fish with a rod and reel or power.
Power girdies.
Yeah. Power. Well, then you'd have to be selling to somebody with a power girdie license, you know. Your boat won't be worth what it would be worth with a license, but it'll be worth what it's worth today as a, you know, for a sports commercial maybe to play with, or for a troller that doesn't have as good a boat as you. The thing that has been noticeable in Canada has been the fact that you got a lot of new boats out of a limited entry program. There were a lot of people that they couldn't really see any justification of buying a new boat, so they fished their junker. And a lot of them pushed their boats up on the beach, because if they sold out to the buyback fund, they were out of the fishery. And so they had no choice but to either push the boat up or sell it for a pleasure boat or get what they could out of it, sometimes strip the engine. But it has resulted in a fleet of a lot newer boats, which has been to their national benefit. And as I think I just said a minute ago, I'm not claiming that this is fair. I'm just saying, which is more unfair, allowing a continual new entry that slices the pie thinner and thinner and drives people at this end completely out, or stopping the entry to a person who hasn't been hurt yet and trying to save this other category? It's one of the problems of a population increase in Alaska is the fact that you're going to have troubles bumping into people you didn't used to have.
Well, I don't think it really, I'm not up here for the water's going to hurt me. In fact, it's doing some good if I was kicked clear out, because of the fact that it probably saved me a lot of money. But not up there because I think I'm going to get hurt. I'll just do it for the enjoyment. In fact, I enjoy getting out there fishing.